And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is May 25th, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to explain to you what's going on in Israeli politics. I know that everybody is questioning all the hoo-ha that is coming out and all the rhetoric that try to scare what is going to become from the Israeli government since we had the defense minister quitting. Now, before we start explaining everything to you, I want to tell you that it's a good day for you. It's a blessed day. It's a change in the book kind of a day. So pay attention, all right? So let's start. Let's start with the first segment.
The news shocked Israelis and Palestinians. Israel's defense minister portfolio on offer to outspoken, ultra-nationalist, far-right-wing politician Avigdor Lieberman. Lieberman, a former Israel foreign minister, publicly calls for transfer of Israeli Arabs to Palestinian territories and has advocated Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas's ouster. The offer was a move made by Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to broaden his narrow coalition. Local headlines warn of a budding fascist state and impending doom. Some analysts say the response is exaggerated.
Mr. Lieberman will not have the final say on whether Israel is going to war, yes or no. It's not his prerogative. It's not only his decision. There's a government to go through. There is a security cabinet to go through. And eventually, there's the prime minister who has the ultimate say.
That doesn't appease Palestinians, who know the defense minister oversees Israel's military policy in the occupied West Bank.
Bringing the criminal Lieberman into this government means more Palestinian bloodshed and fuel for the continuation of the far-right, most extreme government ever. This would decrease chances for future peace and would bring about criminal and aggressive escalation, as Lieberman calls for more killing in the streets of prisoners and others.
Critics also question the appointment that gave rise to Defense Minister Moshe Ya'alon's ouster. During his recent tenure, the popular former chief of staff was accused by the right wing of barring settlement expansion.
When Avigdor Lieberman took up his position as foreign minister in 2009, analysts then predicted he had set back Israeli diplomacy by 25 years. By stepping into the role of defense minister, they're now asking, will he further inflame already tense relations with Palestinians? Stephanie Fried, CCTV, Tel Aviv.
All right. Let's start with the making sense out of everything. And I'm telling you as it is because I speak truthfully and I understand what the player are doing and what is in stake. Okay, so let's take a conscious look. The Minister of Defense quit. He decided to quit because he got insulted. Now, why he got insulted is because the prime minister was mad that he took the position of the, again, you know, the libertarian military. What does it mean? It means that Mr. Yalon decided that every person in the military can speak his mind if it's right or wrong. And, you know, when it starts with military, it's a really tricky deal. In America, in the USA, thank God we have really a strict policy. You don't talk to the news. You don't have an opinion. You're a soldier. And when you're a soldier, you just obey the rules, right? Because the mission is to defend the country. It's not there to make an opinion segment. So that libertarian part or, you know, liberal part of Yalon showed up because essentially it came from the left. We had a very left base where he lives and everything. He's a great guy. You know, I'm telling you because I know him personally. He's a wonderful man. And he's incredibly frank. And something that he is outspoken and he spoke a lot. And, you know, he mentioned something, comments about Secretary of State John Kerry. And yeah, his ideas of being candid is really bold. So he insulted Benjamin Netanyahu by not, you know, going against his will or his position, and being a prime minister, he couldn't tolerate it. And you know what? I have to be second with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I really need to explain that fact, that the Minister of Defense needs to be in line with the Prime Minister, because it's like a band. The conductor must, you know, go with make everybody sing, so drill, you know, well, a play or whatever. So we have to understand that by Minister of Defense Yellen insulting Benjamin Netanyahu by not standing with him, he actually undermined his power, which had, you know, the consequence of somebody's getting fired or quitting, and Yellen quit. It just as simple as that. Now, while he was quitting, everybody's saying that he was quitting because there was negotiation with, you know, the right-wing division of Lieberman. Lieberman is a Russian, you know, is a Russian born. He's a very nice, bold guy. He's big, like a teddy bear. He makes a lot of sound, but you know what? You see, he was a Secretary of Foreign Affairs, and he was not bad. He didn't fight with everybody, but he demanded respect. And the consequence of the, you know, of his doing was the Turkey crisis, which came, you know, came about because somebody is insulting his power. So you have to understand, in the Middle East, you're playing a lot with respect. And the players here, they're really sensitive and they're mighty because they lead people to war, they lead people to peace, they lead people to evacuation. They, you know, people evacuated Gaza Strip to give the Palestinian the territory. And it was under Sharon. The Sharon government was the one that evacuated the settlement from Gaza Strip. And everybody was fearing from Sharon. Sharon was like bad-mouthed everywhere. So for people to say that Lieberman is so right-wing, when he was the foreign minister, and, you know, nothing happened, only a few friends in Africa, because they understand power. And he's a nice, kind, very polite man. He's a real gentleman. You have to understand, he play it nice, he speak. Even that when he start to insult Benjamin Netanyahu because the struggle, he was still polite. So when he asked for forgiveness, or, you know, his apology was accepted because he was kind. See, so politics is really tough sometimes when you crash on style, on, or you crush with a lot of power. Think about Yellen is mega strong. You got Benjamin Netanyahu that is mega strong with legacy. You got Lieberman that come with a lot of power, and it's really hard to have so many powerful people at the same time to orchestrate such a thing. You know, doing is a genius kind of work. So let's give it to, you know, to where it's needed to be given the credit. So I'm giving the credit to Benjamin Netanyahu. I understand fully why Yellen had to go. I understand that his intention is to come back. Of course, he needs to come back. But politics, you know, you get punches. Now, the fact that he fell off the wagon doesn't mean that... I know I use something that you use for something else, I know. Sometimes I use stuff that is so American, and I'm thinking about it in Israeli terms. For us to fall off, you know, the bus, to say that, you know, you're not on the same train anymore, you're not going someplace anymore because you stop. It's okay. So Yalon is taking time off. I hope that you will listen to some words of wisdom as far as making a decision fast, because in politics, you can be really old news so fast. It's like the movies. It's same like Hollywood. If you're not in the movies, you're gone. And you're good as your last gig, as they say. So I'm keeping myself alive every day here and talking to people and seeing that the news are young and mighty. And we talk about what kind of coalition now Netanyahu is going to have. Netanyahu is going to have a larger coalition that will give him the chance to rule better without fighting with every, you know, single man in his own party to get the vote. And then we have a new secretary of immigration or whatever they translated to. Absorption, let's say, that will take care of the Russians or any immigrants that come to the country. And she's a wonderful lady. We have a great lady coming to office. And then we add, so the coalition will be made by another five people. Two of them will be minister, one will be Minister of Defense. Of course, Minister of Defense, like Sharon, was a scary one. Lieberman is a scary one too. And you know, the enemies need to know that we have a scary minister of defense, and it's good. I wouldn't like to have a puppet, you know. And of course, he'll do whatever he takes. He's smart, he's vigorous, and he plays right. He's gentleman. So let's keep on thinking what else. The most exciting news, though, today, is the fact that we have a new member of the Knesset. His name is Yehuda Glick. He was on my show a few months ago. I don't know how much, but a few months. You can find it someplace in the archives. This guy was one of the most incredible, courageous men to go on Temple Mount and to promote human rights and prayer on Temple Mounts for everybody, something that the Jews don't get it. And I'm sorry I'm saying the Jews. The Jewish people on Temple Mount are not free to worship God, which is ludicrous because we are de facto the power that control it. They might have agreement with Jordan, but de facto, we are in control of Temple Mount, and we're giving the Muslim every liberty they need. We give everybody the right to be, but just to the Israeli, we don't let them bring a book, the Bible, the most sacred book of all, to the holy places where not is not welcome, because for some reason, the state of Israel decided that the Quran is more important than the Bible, which is I really hope that somebody get disturbed by this, because nobody say anything ever. So now that we have a member of Knesset, Yehuda Glick, that is devoted man to God, and he went to Temple Mount. And on top of it, he got shot four times, got four bullets, and survived it because he was going on the holy place. Well, trust me, that day that he went and he got shot in the begging center in Jerusalem, the next day I was in the hospital. Everybody thought that he was a goner. I sat down and I prayed with my friend Michael Ganeau, that was on one of our show too. He's a journalist from America, and he's a friend. And we sat down and we prayed, and we hoped that God will give us miracle, because this guy symbolized the freedom of the Jewish people to go on Temple Mount. And once you go, you survive it, we all, you know, we see a miracle and we're blessed. So now today I was so emotional because he was speaking there on Temple Mount. And I remember when we started the movement in 2006, I made the first event for the Temple Mount in the Congressional Center in Jerusalem. And 1,200 people came from all over. I united all the groups together. I came from South Carolina and just say it's about time. Jerusalem is the only place for everybody. We have to declare it as the capital of Israel so we can have a free freedom for everybody. And we started this movement. And today to see a member of the Knesset is that being elected and signed and swear in to office, that was so emotional that I was in tears and I was really crying because it's something that arrived, the ship arrived home. You know, that threshold that you come, we said, hey, whatever we fought for actually got heard. So I think that that's, you know, keep on dreaming hard because your dream might come true faster than you think. So my friends were outside the hall after we got out from listening to Yehuda Glick speaking on the Knesset floor. And he said to me, you know, the temple, the holy temple, it might really be built. So I told him, what do you think? We're joking? You know, the temple is a temple. It's a holy place. Why don't we have the right to build a temple? What so hard to understand that we have to honor God? Why we cannot build a temple on the holy place for all, everybody? And it's supposed to be the temple that everybody comes to pray. You see, in the end of time, when everybody will be in Kumbaya and we love each other and we play nice and we be fun and happiness and we can take care of the poor and the elderly and we can make business together, and you know, the Arabs and the Jews will be, and the Israeli, forget, you know, the Jews are all over the place, so they're going to be coming back to Israel. But the Israeli and the Arabs will play nice and they'll make business, and they are terrific businessmen. Something that you know about the Arab people, they are so good in business. I've been working with them in Italy and I can respect them so much for that. And they're kind and they're nice. The only thing that, you know, if they know you're Israeli, it's over. For some reason, they have like something in that. So in the change of heart, when everybody will be happy, the holy temple will be built, but it will be built for everybody. It means that that's the test of us all, how we can get along to pray under one roof for one God. Everybody's God is one God. That's the ultimate thing. So we are, when we seeing stuff coming toward us, we're excited. But we are thinking about a good end, not, you know, that's the Jewish end is like everybody is really in Kumbaya. All right, I've been speaking a while, so let's listen to some music, okay? And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth on BBS Radio Studio One. Doug Newsom is with me today, helping as usual, working hard and managing everything. And sir, you are incredible. So let's think about, you know, by the way, Bonnie M. with By the Rivers of Babylon is such a legend. Such a momentous and a gift to the universe when they sang that song to tell us, you know, you cannot pray to God out of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is a holy city for everybody. And I really need you to understand that in the universe, there are a few spots in the world that must be preserved. And for some reason, UNESCO decided that it's only a Muslim site, which tells you that we need to get rid of UNESCO, or United Nations really needs to have reclaim its ownership on the international arena, because the way they conduct business is really bad. And I'm not talking bad, it's incredible. We had yesterday I spoke, I sent for my friend Tamar Yona in the Israeli Talk News, and I spoke to David Badin. David Badin been investigating UNRWA. UNRWA is a little organization that the United Nations built to help refugee situation in the Palestinian territories. Now think about it. You got Gaza, right? Remember 2006, Israeli evacuated Gaza. So it means it's free. There is no Israeli there. They still keep them in refugee camps. We're talking 10 years from then, right? 10 years. Of course, they use billion less, you know, last quote that I remember is 5 billion that they got like 2015. They use all the money on the institution there to create tunnels to try to destroy Israel. And don't they get the message that Israel just gets stronger because Almighty God wants Israel to be in Israel? They don't get it. And by the way, what's the problem? You know, the world is big. You got your side, we got our. You play nice and we play nice. And the stronger you try to fight, the stronger you get it. It's the reaction of whatever you do, because we're going to defend God's land. We're going to defend Jerusalem. We're going to defend Temple Mount. And there is nothing in the world that will stop, you know, God from helping when that's his will, right? Now, we got one friend, a very quiet one, a friend that is not a friend. He's not declared. He doesn't have a relationship. It's like we have a respectful understanding that somewhere in the future, something can change. All right? Now, do you want a secret? I'll tell you a secret today, because it's a very emotional day to me. And once I play, I have to finish, you know, the story completely, all right? In 2002, the Saudis came out with a plan, a very nice plan, because the intention is nice. Whatever they plan wasn't workable, but the intention was exquisite, excellent. They say, let's make a plan for all the Arab nation to make peace with Israel. It means my brother, remember, they are my brothers, right? But it's not my brother because I call him a brother, hey bro. They are my brothers by Abraham, you know, they're the descendant of Abraham, the same like all of us, but they were the sons and daughter of Ishmael. So being a step brother or half brother, It's like my brother, my oldest brother, decided that he's gonna be my brother again. And 2002, they came up with a plan and said, okay, guys, you go back to 67, pre-67 border, and that's it. Actually, they heard probably what everybody was saying in 2002, just after the Camp David Accord disappeared. Now, I don't want to confuse you. Remember, we had a peace agreement in 1993 and 4 with a Palestinian, with President Clinton, that did really hard work to get everybody on board. And Mr. Prime Minister Rabin lost his life because somebody decided to shoot him because he didn't like what he was doing with the peace, which I don't know what the band name called on, you know, on the radio, but you guys understand. So that man is in jail, but we lost Prime Minister Rabin. And Prime Minister Rabin, I remember that day that he was on stage in Washington, D.C. with President Clinton, and they were talking about moving the embassy of USA 1994 to Jerusalem. I would never forget that day. They were on stage and we were so happy. It was like, wow, we're going to have peace with the Palestinian. The Americans are going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is going to reign, you know, like it's supposed to be, you know, holy place in the universe. And then they shut Rabin. Then the court went down the drain, and in 2000, all it breaks. And in 2001, they start rioting. Not before, you know, just before we had Prime Minister Barak in 2000, that took also the army from Lebanon. So Israel were like trying to be all in check, taking back the army from Lebanon, taking back, you know, going back and with accords with the Palestinian, trying to play it by the book, really with accordance with everybody. And then there were riots. And I remember sitting in South Carolina in my, you know, in my construction site. We were building Sun City, Hilton, and then and we went there and to build a retirement community. And when you're there with all those people, great people, South Carolina, you have, and happy birthday, South Carolina, by the way, you know, she had a birthday now. And when you have, you're sitting there and you're thinking what's going on and the rights break, I saw the minister, the ambassador to the UN from the Saudis. And he seems so nice. He seems so calm. And I decided to write him a letter. Those days, I used to fax like crazy because, you know, my heart is going out to the people of the world. So I'm an activist. I'm not sitting still. I write, I talk to everybody. These days, they don't get much of mail from me, but they used to. So I sent a mail to the ambassador, fax, and I asked him, said, we need to do something. You know, this is a God's land. We need to be okay. And then come out this 2002 proposition for peace. Nobody asked how it comes about and why it comes about. They just think like miracles happen just like this. Somebody has to work for this. And I never take credit, and it's okay. However, this day we have a surprise. The foreign minister of Saudi now is the same ambassador of the United Nations, the prince. He's fantastic. And now he's working on revisiting that plan to see how we can play it right, which is a blessing. So let's listen what we have about the foreign minister of the Saudis.
To put a face on this, right? Sure. Off the top, Who is the Saudi ambassador to Washington? This is a man very well known in this town, a very senior international diplomat. You see his picture there. This man's name is Adel Al-Jaber. He is very close to King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. He was close to King Fahad before King Abdullah. He is very senior, works at the behest of the royal family. Now, the Saudi royal family, of course, has been in essentially a knife fight, one with Al-Qaeda in that country, their own terrorist attacks that have happened inside Saudi Arabia, but also the king of Saudi Arabia has come out against the violence in Syria, and that potentially links this to Iran, because the Iran Quds Force that you kept hearing about in this press conference, the Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, the most militant wing of the Iranian military, is essentially looking at Syria as one of its satellite states for the last many years. They have been using Assad as their place from which to launch attacks, to support terrorism, to support Hamas, to run weapons all over the world. So, you know, there is bad blood at the moment between Iran and Saudi Arabia on a couple of fronts. Adel Al-Jaber, very well known, very respected in this town as an international diplomat. And you know, if we look a little bit further at this unsealed complaint that we have now, the discussion of the Quds Force of Iran is very interesting, because this is a terrorist force not very well understood, perhaps, by many Americans. We have heard about Al-Qaeda for so many years. This Al-Quds Force is front and center in U.S. military, U.S. national security concerns. They have operated against U.S. troops in Iraq, against U.S. troops in Afghanistan. They have supported terrorism, assassination plots, all kinds of attacks around the world, especially in the Middle East. It is the militant wing that the U.S. military has kept a very close eye on inside Iran, and their own expansionism of Al-Quds across the Middle East as they engage in these operations. And clearly today we're seeing Al-Quds try and reach out and touch inside the United States.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. We were listening to some profiling for the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Saudis, which used to be the ambassador to the USA and to the ambassador to the United Nations. He's working hard, is a calm man, and I hope that he's the voice of the future in the Arab world, because he's been calling to ceasefire in this in the Assad regime. He's calling to get to check everybody and to everybody around, you know, to play by the book. I don't know what else the Saudi have in stake, but of course there is a lot of conspiracies theory and what they're doing. But the fact of the matter is, this is the only voice that I can hear that is trying to help calm the situation everywhere. And you know what? I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I'm praying for everybody to start working together. Now, while we are talking about the possibilities, we have a lot of activity of the Palestinian that thinking that brutality is something that they can promote, and we'll fight them. You know, that no terrorist can survive this round. We gonna win this. The war on terror is gonna end soon. And I know that the Americans troops are working hard, and I know that the European troops are working hard. I know that the Russian played with the coalition great. And I think that Iraqi, now in Iraq, is going to be really, really hard to stay. So they are calling on everybody to leave Iraq, because it's a dangerous place. The Iraqi government is trying to eliminate the terrorism, and they're fighting between them each other. So the Western power should and be out of it. Anyway, we got more to talk about and the fact that what's going on in the crisis in France with the oil companies. Let's listen to that.
Got business news from Stephen here now. Big, big business story out here in France today. A strike at oil refineries and depots continuing, and more problems, of course, inevitably from that for motorists.
Yeah, that's right. In the past few hours, police have removed striking workers from the entrance to the depot at Fos-sur-Mer near the southern city of Marseille. The blockade on that site has been lifted, and tankers are now entering and exiting the refinery there. The CGT union says despite that, though, strikes are now affecting all eight of France's oil refineries. The workers protesting changes to France's labour laws, which will make it easier for struggling companies to fire workers. Around a fifth of France's petrol stations are now running out of fuel because of the strikes. Mark Thompson has the story.
Cleared with water cannons and tear gas in the early hours of the morning. Security forces stepped in as the blockade at the Fos-sur-Mer oil depot in southern France looked to run into a third day. Both sides reported injuries from the operation. The blockade alone had caused fuel shortages at hundreds of petrol stations in the southeast of the country. Riot police also intervened at several other depots, but strike action is underway at all eight of France's refineries over controversial labour reforms.
We're going to cause a fuel shortage. We hear from parts of the media there won't be one for 3 weeks because of the reserves. But in under a week we've had strikes all over the country and there are already shortages. They need to find some more credible lies.
Workers at the Le Havre oil import terminal have also voted to join the strike, a move which could increase disruption. Almost half the country's crude stock passes through the port. Around 20% of France's 12,000 petrol stations have already either run dry or are running low on resources. The crisis has even forced some in the northeast of the country to cross the border into Belgium in search of fuel.
I think there's easily 30 or 40% more than usual. We kind of hope it lasts, although we don't want it to be that bad.
French Prime Minister Manuel Valls has called the strike blackmail, but insists there's no reason to panic. The government says, if necessary, it has enough emergency reserves to last for 90 days.
Now, the French Prime Minister has been speaking about this during a visit to the Middle East. Speaking from Jerusalem, he says they'll continue to remove the blockades from fuel depots and that there was no question of abandoning the labour law reforms.
Let's turn to Greece now and its finances. It could be the main subject of a meeting of Eurozone finance ministers later.
Greece is hoping to unlock as much as 11 billion euros in bailout money after passing a series of tax rises over the weekend. But the meeting will also tackle the controversial subject of debt relief. Germany in particular is staunchly opposed to any haircut on Greece's debts, but the International Monetary Fund is insisting that it would be included in the bailout agreement done last year. Ahead of the talks, the IMF called for European creditors to forego any debt payments until 2040 and to fix interest rates at 1.5%, much lower than where they are now. Those measures, though, may be difficult for some European countries to stomach.
Markets now, what's happening then?
European shares opening down, although not by much, at the start of trading this Tuesday. Car makers seeing some falls, but oil and gas shares generally trading up. No great movement in shares of the French oil company Total, of course, and watch them in the wake of those strikes. They're trading pretty flat in Paris. Over in Asia, shares generally trading down as well. A few factors influencing that. One is investors worried about the increasing prospect of an interest rate hike in the United States. The other one is the strengthening value of the yen, making things bad for Japanese exporters. Some more of the day's business headlines for you next. Revenues at music streaming service Spotify jumped by 80% in the past year to almost 2 billion euros. But the Swedish company is still struggling to make a profit. Net losses increased by 7%. Spotify had 89 million active users at the end of last year, 28 million of whom were paying for their subscriptions. Coca-Cola's had to stop producing soft drinks in Venezuela because of a shortage of sugar. Sugarcane production has been falling due to price controls and rising costs as Venezuela faces shortages of many goods. The country's biggest brewer has also been forced to close plants due to a shortage of barley. And regulators in Singapore and Switzerland have ruled the Swiss private bank BSI committed serious breaches of money laundering rules. Singapore has withdrawn BSI's licence over its connection to misappropriation of funds from the Malaysian state investment fund 1MDB. It's already been fined more than 100 million euros over the breaches.
Let's talk about Facebook now. This is changes made to how it selects trending topics for its users.
And we are back. You know, some news from around the globe is always interesting to me because I like a bigger perspective. You know, if I would be born again and add the wish, I probably would like to be an astronaut, you know, to, because the world is crazy. But it's amazing when you look at, you know, the picture out of space, you see how everything changes, and it's like a heartbeat. The world is fantastic. And the green and the seas and the skies, it's amazing. You know, God created such a perfect world and is such a great, not just designer, what art. Nobody can imitate whatever this universe is. That's why I respect it so much. And we need to respect the life of every human and every creature that there is. And I know there is a lot of organization that trying to save lives of animals and protect them from abuse. And there are so many wonderful things that Prince Harry is doing to preserve life of animals, you know, in Africa. And I know about a call today that they are looking to save the wolves in Yellowstone. And I'm with you guys. I hope that you have the chance to save as much and preserve as much nature, because if we preserve, we keep the balance. You know, the balance in life is really a sensitive matter, and sometimes we need to make sure that we don't overreach and overprotect. Just play it nice. It's a quarter to the hour, and I think that you deserve another song. Let's listen to that.
You ask me if I love you, and I choke on my reply. I'd rather hurt you honestly than mislead you with a lie. And who am I to judge you on what you say or do? I'm only just beginning to see.
Wow, that was a song from 1976, I think. It's Dan Hill with Sometimes When We Touch. It's all history. Guys, you know, life passed so fast, and we have to understand that our duty and role in this life is changing every day. And sometimes you walk and you do the great thing that you can do, and you protect your own, then life takes over and you question what happened. And then it just line you back to where you're supposed to be. You see, the big masterpiece of the universe, it's not in our hands, so we are just a part of it. And sometimes life go fast, sometimes life goes softer and bigger and stronger. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. So we have to bless today, live, you know, seize the moment, make the best out of it. And I want to thank all my friends in America, which were great instructor to me, great masters of understanding, a lot of creativity and devotion to being. You know, you find so many gurus in life, and I found, of course, my rabbi of Lubavitch, a rabbi, which is amazing, because he still is all over. He's very, very famous, so we can take comfort in his face, in his being, which was incredible. And then we have a big holiday coming tonight. It's Lag BaOmer. It's the Bound I don't know how they call it. It's like a fire bounce that they do everywhere. So if you see a fire bounce today someplace, just remember they respect their religion. And that's like a claim, like we are here. We are united with God. And probably it's one day only. It's a festive day. Everybody's going to the Galilee, height of Galilee mountains, where they have the very place of a very big righteous man, Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Simon, I guess you can call him. And he was, I don't know, I don't want to say the wrong name, but what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter how you worship or how you meditate, as long as you remember that you're part of something and you're never alone, because today in this technology, we're all united, here we're united in every work that we do. You're connected, so you're never alone anymore. You cannot get depressed. I read one of the postings today that somebody said, when I get depressed, I look up at the sky and then I become happy. Because, you're not alone, all right? So, and remember, he has his messengers. So every once in a while, he sends us a great one. And I can't wait for the great new messenger that will come around and will take us, sweep us with his inspiration. You know, President Clinton was a great inspiration for me and Rabin, of course, it's Isaac Rabin, Yitzhak Rabin, to my political life and inspiration. And they just took me, President Clinton gave me the feeling that I could do everything. And I was listening with awe to him. And trust me, that was a really great time for America. Until they had this situation with Lewinsky and everything. Everybody has little misconduct once in a while. So I don't know. I'm not going to judge, but I'm just giving credit when credit is due, okay? So we are running out of time. And I know that that in Isaiah there is a song, or the latest prophets were saying that, "Behold, my servant, whom I shall uphold, my chosen one, whom my soul desire. I have placed my spirit upon him, so he can bring forth justice to the nations." Amen. I hope that we're going to have some kind of good messengers. And you all can become those messengers. You can be that person that decides to do good, that messenger that can do right, that messenger that can help. Please, be one. Because it's much more fun, and it's happiness, and it's worthy cause to be worthy before God. All right, so on this holiday eve, again, I'm going to bless everybody and send all my love around and hope that you guys come to grip with the reality that we need to play by the rules and see how we can win. Now the economy is the task, if anybody is asking, okay? God bless you all. All the best. Ciao, ciao.